I-O, so off to work I go. The greatest threat to our nest egg is an ugly four-letter word called debt. Now, the Bible does not condemn debt, but there are some very strong warnings about debt. And debt is not called a sin, but it can be a symptom of a sin. Greed, overindulgence, impatience, lack of self-discipline. Well, we're going to start by reading Proverbs 22:7. That's on the first page of Lesson 3. And who has that one? Okay. Just talk real loud.
The poor are slaves to the rich. The one who borrows is a servant to the one who lends.
Okay. It's all right to be a slave, but we need to make sure we have the right master. We have a friend in Jesus, but I would submit to you that debt collectors and creditors are not our friends. All right, the next passage down on the first page of Lesson 3 is Psalm 37:21.
The wicked borrows and does not repay, but the righteous shows mercy and gives.
Okay. Romans 13:8.
Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another.
And Jesus said in Matthew 5:26.
I tell you the truth, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny.
Okay. This next scripture, every time I read it, I wish that the chaplains in the United States Congress could read it before Congress every morning that they're in session. Deuteronomy 15:6.
For the Lord your God will bless you as he has promised you, and you will lend not to many nations, but you will not borrow. And you will rule over many nations, but they will not rule over you.
Okay. Now tonight we're going to talk about three types of credit. Credit card debt, mortgage debt, and automobile loans. And if I have time, we'll also go over credit bureaus, credit reports, and FICO scores, but it's a pretty long lesson. Tonight, I want you to go home and ask your husbands a question. If you don't have a husband, then ask yourself. So read your first homework assignment is to read your lesson. The second one is to ask your husbands this question. How much could we save if we didn't have any payments? Debt is so ingrained in our society that we cannot imagine a car without a payment, a house without a mortgage, a student without a loan, or a credit without a card. Well, how much does the typical family make and the typical family spend? The typical family makes about $50,000 a year, which comes out to $3,350 a month. Out of that, the typical family spends $850 on the mortgage, $495 on the car, $180 on the second car, $165, I got to look that one up, on the student loan, $185 on the credit cards, with an average of $12,000 owed, and $120 on consumer debt, like stereos and computers and furniture, things like that. And when you add up all of this, it's $1,995. I just rounded it off to $2,000. That is 60% of the take-home pay. So $2,000, what could you do and how much could you save if you're like the typical family and you didn't have any payments? Well, a couple of $1,000s a month. Americans, let's first talk about credit card debt. Americans are drowning in credit card debt, and I probably don't have to tell you that. We owe over $1 trillion. I can't even fathom how much money that is. Over 2 million homes owe over $20,000 on credit cards. Dogs and dead people have credit cards. But there's some smart folks around, because one-third of American adults do not have a credit card. They have not been mastered by a card. They have not discovered bondage, and American excess has left their lives. Well, there's nothing that you can do with a credit card that you cannot do with a debit card. You can check into a hotel, you can rent a car, you can even buy online. If your debit card has a Visa or a MasterCard logo on it, you can even use that to buy online. Now, I'm not sure I would buy online with a debit card because it is linked to your checking account, and I worry about identification theft, but I've had my identification stolen three times in the last 10 years or so. And with a debit card, you do not have dispute-like rights like you do with a credit card. So, you know, if you spent $500 on something with your credit card and then you have a dispute about it, the credit card company could hold the money up. But, if you know, once it's gone from your account, it's gone. But usually you have the same protections with a debit card that you have with a credit card. And your liability, you know, that credit card insurance they try to get you to buy, I wouldn't worry about that because the most you're going to lose is $50 and probably you're not going to lose anything. Some of you have a credit card, you say, because in case of an emergency. Well, you'll probably have an emergency. But remember, last week we talked about an emergency fund that everyone needs to have. If you have an emergency fund, then you don't have to worry about having a credit card because you have an emergency. Now, I've seen rates as low as 0% and as high as 29%. There's probably some out there that have more than 29%, but probably the ones I've seen that were the highest were the department store credit cards, like Sears and Penny's and Dillard's and Macy's. Well, the three of the largest creditors in the United States are Sears, JCPenney, and Ford Motor Credit. I wonder if those three men that started that business ever realized what happened. Because Sears, in 1910, their catalog had a statement that said, "Buying on credit is folly." James Cash Penny absolutely detested the use of debt. And Henry Ford said that credit was a lazy man's way to buy a car. And General Motors offered credit long before the Ford Motor Company did because of his belief. Tonight I'm going to pick on one credit card just to describe the tricks they have up their sleeves. And that one is probably the trickiest one that I can think of is the Discover card. Remember the old adage, if it sounds too good to be true, it what? Probably is. Now, they advertise all the time, get cash back from your purchases. And I've seen them say you get 1% cash back for your purchases. Well, if you read the fine print, it says up to 1%. Well, the only way you could possibly come out ahead with that is to pay the full balance when you receive your statement. But remember what I said about that before, that first lesson that we had? When you use a credit card, most people will spend 30 to 50% more. They'll buy that much more simply because they didn't have to let go of their cash. They used a credit card. And I know, I don't think that's true of me now, but I know when I was a younger woman, I would use my credit card because I didn't have cash. And I know that I overspent because I knew I didn't have to pay it till next month. And then when next month came, I couldn't believe what I had on that card. 60% of people don't pay the full balance when they receive the bill. A store that I go into at home a lot is Sam's, and I've noticed they really promote the Discover card. And I started noticing when people were going through the line that either the little screen would prompt them or the cashier would turn to them and say, "Do you want cash back?" Well, after I'd seen this two or three times and several ladies said, "Yeah, give me $20 or give me $50. I asked the cashier, I said, "Why are you asking that question?" And she said, "Oh, well, that's the Discover card." And then it hit me. You know what that is, don't you? That's called a cash advance. Have you ever looked at the cost of a cash advance? Well, I tried to. I went on Discover's website, and I couldn't get them on the website to tell me what it was. But I did see this sentence. It said, "Typically, the card issuer charges a cash advance fee and begins charging interest immediately." Well, first of all, the words that hit me were "card issuer." And I'm reading this, and I'm thinking, "Card issuer?" I said, "Aren't they talking about themselves?" And I read it to my husband, and I said, who are they talking about? He said, well, obviously they're talking about themselves. They just don't want to admit it. But notice it said that the interest starts accruing immediately. Well, I finally just called Discover and asked them. And they charged, the lady I talked to said they charged 28% interest on a cash advance plus 5% fee. That is 33%. It ought to be against the law, but it's not. So when you apply for a credit card, don't even read all that literature that they send you. All those letters they send you talking about what a wonderful customer you are and they want to up your ante or give you this credit card. Just turn the application over on the back and look at the Schumer box. Now, the Schumer box was named after Chuck Schumer, who was a Democratic congressman or senator from New York. And in 1988, he sponsored the legislation that was passed. And it's a pretty good consumer law, although I think what happens is once we have one consumer law, then all these people run out and try to figure out a way to get around those laws, so we end up having to have more and more laws. But that law states, it's federally mandated that they must tell you the APR, the annual percentage rate. They have to tell you about any annual fees that are in there. I remember years ago applying for a credit card, and I read every word of all the fine print. They didn't say one word about an annual fee. And about 6 months after I got the card, I got slapped with a $50 annual fee. And I told them, you never told me anything about it, and there wasn't a thing I could do about it. They have to tell you how finance charges are calculated and then how late fees are assessed. And then in 2009, we had more legislation that came through that regulated what kind of interest rates they can charge and when they can up the ante and that kind of thing. Well, there's all different kinds of ways of calculating finance charges. And there's three questions you need to ask yourself. First of all, is it one cycle? Look on the Schumer box and see if it's a one-cycle billing or two-cycle billing. Well, two-cycle billing means that they are charging you 2 months of interest. They're going back 2 months. And then ask yourself, is it adjusted balance, an average daily balance, or the previous balance? Most credit cards are the average daily balance, and that is the one that's the most fair. And the third question you need to ask us is, does the finance charge include or exclude new purchases? And it's going to be a lot more expensive if it includes new purchases. Now, turn over in your books to page 23. We have an example at the bottom of the page of how an interest is calculated for a $1,000 charge. Now, I think the example in the paragraph tells you it's 19.8% interest. A $1,000 was charged, and then the customer made a minimum payment. And I don't really know how much that minimum payment was. But then they charged another $1,000, so it was almost $2,000, and then they paid it off. So what would the finance charge be? Well, the first one is the average daily balance excluding new purchases, and that was $16.50. And then there's the average daily balance including new purchases, $33. And then the two-cycle average daily balance excluding new purchases, $32.80, and the two-cycle average daily balance including new purchases, $49.05. Well, there's a whopping difference between $16 and $49. Guess which one Discover uses? The two-cycle method. So the only way you're going to win on that one is to pay your balance off when you get the statement. Now, what if, you know, gave this example of charging $1,000. What if you charged $1,000? Let's talk about minimum payments for a minute. What if you charged $1,000 and you made minimum payments on it and you didn't ever use it again? Well, I talked with a young man a number of years ago who was a college student, and he had, and by the way, those credit card companies are like tobacco companies. Tobacco companies used to go out and they got their new customers by handing out free packs of cigarettes at all kinds of sporting events like car races and rodeos. And the United States government made that illegal, so now they just go overseas and do it to the kids overseas. Well, the credit card companies go to college campuses and they recruit. They give out free T-shirts and free this and free that to get kids who don't even have a job to sign up for a credit card. Well, this one young man told me about taking out one of those credit cards, and he said before he knew it, he had $800 charged. And he got mad at himself, so he cut the credit card up and vowed he would never use it again, and he started making minimum payments. Well, the grace period on credit cards used to be 30 days. Now it's 25. That means there's 25 days from the time that Discover or whoever sends you the bill. When they send the bill, there's 25 days from the time they send it to you have to get the money back to them. And like most college students, he was a procrastinator. So there were several times that he just was late making the payment because he didn't pay the bill right away. You know, when my statement comes, the check is in the mail the next day because I don't want to make that mistake. You might as well go out to the beach, stand on the pier, and throw a couple of $20 bills in the ocean because it's going to cost you an arm and a leg every time that happens. I think now it's about $35, $35 or $40 for a late payment. And sometimes it depends on how much you owe. Well, this young man paid the $40 a month for a year. Well, 40 times 12 is $480, almost $500. He owed $800, but then he had a couple of late payments. 1 year later, he owed $800 on the credit card. Folks, you won't live long enough to pay it off. Now, what if you had $1,000 charged, and I looked at my MasterCard, and I looked at the minimum payment on it, and it's 1%. Most of them, it's a percentage. It might be 1%, 2%, maybe 5%, but they never ask for very much. They don't want you to pay very much. Mine is only 1%. What if you had a credit card and you charged $1,000, but you never charged another dime, and you're going to make the minimum payment to pay it off? 21% interest. The minimum payment would only be $10 a month for a $1,000 bill. It would take you 50 years to pay it off. I think I have that written over here. Yeah, $1,000 at 21% interest. The minimum payment is $10. It would take you 50 years to pay it off. Your interest, $205,000. The interest on the finance charge each month. Folks, that's not the worst part. That's not the worst part. Because there is something called an opportunity cost. If you spend money here, then you have lost the opportunity to spend money there. What if instead of paying all that interest every month, you instead invested the money? Well, if you invested that money that you spend every month on the interest on the credit card at a return of 7%, after those 50 years, you would have $1,887,000, almost $2 million, folks. Well, it's just hard to win the money game with credit cards. We need to stop the madness. So I've got some suggestions for how to use your credit cards. First of all, why not just freeze your credit cards? I mean, literally freeze them. Fill up an ice tray with water and put your credit cards in it. Put it in the freezer. If you go to the store and you absolutely cannot do without that great buy that you have found, you will have to go home and thaw the credit card out. And then go back to the store, and by that time, maybe you would have come to your senses and decided it really wasn't worth it after all. Here's another suggestion. Just quit shopping. If you don't go into a store, you're not going to be nearly as tempted to buy. So try just not shopping. Or you could put your family on a spending freeze. What about going home and just, discuss this with the family and say, we're going to go on a spending freeze for 90 days. No credit card charges. We're not going to buy anything but gas and food. Nothing. Just think of all the money you could save and think of all the extra time you would have at home with the family. Well, Jesus had another solution. Mark 9:43, he said, if your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. He said, it's better to go through life maimed than with two hands to go into hell where the fire never goes out. Well, I've got another suggestion I think is a little bit easier than cutting our hands off, and that's just to do some plastic surgery. Just cut up the cards. Okay, let's talk about automobile loans. Now, I'm going to say a couple of things that's probably going to make, well, I'm probably going to step on some toes. Just remember, when I'm preaching to you, I'm preaching to me too, because I have to preach to myself all the time. Because remember, I'm one of those spenders. I like to spend. Well, three things I'd like to say. Number one, quit buying new cars. Number two, stop making car payments. And number three, you are not what you drive. I don't pay much attention to what people drive until I go to church. And when I go to church and we pull up, I start noticing what kind of vehicles I have there. Well, we have got some unusual looking cars. We've got some really, two or three really expensive sports cars, several luxury cars. And then I see a lot of families with these fancy SUVs with all the bells and whistles. Remember the family I told you about last week that he lost his job? They have they have three kids and a real nice van that you just touch a button and the door opens for you. And then there's the TV that's hanging from the ceiling. I bet right now they probably wish they didn't have that car payment. Well, and then there are those people at my church that are not average people, like the multimillionaire that goes to Central. His name is J.C. McMullen. He owns rental property all over Lowndes County. He's owned restaurants. He owns part of a mall. He drives an average-looking car. He lives in an average-looking house, and he wears average-looking clothes. I know people who have never, ever in their entire lives had a car payment. I know people who have never once in their entire lives bought a new car. In fact, one of our elders is driving a Lincoln Navigator. That's a really nice car. But he didn't buy it new. He's never bought a new car before, not since I've known him. So consider actually not having a car payment. Stephanie's dad, her mom and dad drive a really nice car. It's a Tahoe, a Chevy Tahoe. It's a very attractive car. Her father keeps it in excellent shape. A few weeks ago, they had a wreck, and they were at a traffic light, and somebody rear-ended them and knocked them into the car in front of them, and Richard said, well, I guess I'm going to have to buy a new car. Well, they decided that they weren't going to buy a new car. They got it fixed anyway, and because Richard said, I've got 295,000 miles on this car, and I want to make sure it goes at least over 300,000 before I trade. I'd say her daddy is a pretty smart man. Now, how do you have a car without payments? Well, I've known a number of people who've done this. When we first moved into our neighborhood, we have some close friends that are about 15 years younger than we are. And when we first moved into our neighborhood, Clyde and Catherine bought a house the same time we did. This was our fourth house. This was their first house. They made an enormous down payment on it. And they were driving a car that they saved up until they had the cash to pay for it. And what you do is you drive an older model car. And they say the best time to buy one is when it's no more than 3 years old, because most of it's a lot of depreciation by that time. But they had bought, their first car was actually a new car. I think it was a Honda Civic. But they've never made any payments. They wait until, what they do is they buy the car, and while they're driving that car, and they drove an older model car to begin with, while they're driving that car, they make car payments to themselves. They put the money in the bank month after month. And by the time that car's worn out, they've got enough cash to pay for it. And just think about all the thousands of dollars in interest they have saved through the years by not having car payments. I remember somebody telling me he has a car that has, it's just like a, well, I wouldn't call it a lemon, but he has one problem with it all the time. And he said, it's a defect from the factory. And he said, every year I've got to get it fixed a couple of times. And I said, well, have you thought about buying another car? And he said, nope. He said, you know what? I think I would rather pay two repair bills that are $500 each than to pay $500 a month for a new car payment. See, that's pretty smart. Well, when you buy a used car, are you buying somebody else's lemon? You know, they don't make them like they used to. Well, according to Consumer Reports, they do. They do make them better than they used to. According to Consumer Reports, a three-year-old car is just as good as a brand new car, and that cars are built better today and last longer than they used to. Well, the average American has a car payment for life. And as we saw, that car payment on the other side was $495 a month. If you are going to keep a car payment for life, your whole working life from age 25 to 65, that would be about 40 years. Now, if you instead invested that $495 a month And I'm gonna give a big rate of return here, 12%. Next week, our lesson is on investing, and we're going to talk about how to get a big rate of return. What if you were to save that $495 a month at a high rate of return? How much could you have after 40 years? $5,881,799. Almost $6 million. Now, how many of you are ready to go out and buy a new car? Now, car dealers typically do not make their money on the lot. That's not where they make their money. I remember a young man that I've known for a number of years, and he was the top salesman at a Toyota dealer in Atlanta. And they promoted him and put him in the finance office. And I'm thinking, why in the world would they do that if he's the top salesman? Well, folks, that's where they make the money. And we'll talk more about that in lesson 9. But the average, and I took these statistics from Dave Ramsey's latest book, and they sounded awfully low to me, but he says that the average amount earned for the car dealer from the sale of a new car is only $82. But he said if they can get you to finance it through them, it's $775. If they can get you to sign a lease, it's $1,300. Now, I've seen car dealers advertise that we'll sell it to you $100 over invoice cost. And they're probably not lying about that. The only thing, what they don't tell you is that after they've paid the invoice, they get a rebate from the manufacturer. You know, a new car depreciates up to 30% the first year. The first 4 years, over half of it is depreciated. And a car today will last a lot longer than 4 years. So if you want to drive a brand new car, then why not on your commute to work every Friday, just roll the window down and toss a $100 bill out? It's the same thing, because that's what you're losing. All we ever ask is how much down and how much a month. What is the difference between looking good and being good? Looking good is when your broke friends are impressed with what you drive. Being good is having more money than they do. All right, before we go on to mortgage debt, I want to throw in one thing, because the Bible says something about this quite a bit. And that is co-signing. And we're going to read, turn over to page 24. We're going to read Proverbs 22, 26 through 27. Who has that one?
Do not be one of those who shakes hands in a pledge, one of those who is surety for debts. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should he take away your bed from under you?
Okay. So that scripture is telling us don't co-sign. Now, when Junior comes to you and begs you to co-sign for the car that he wants, you need to remember this. When Junior is late making those payments, the lender will not tell you, but it's going to go on your credit report. When the car is repossessed, you're going to find out when Junior tells you, because the lender is not going to tell you, but that repo is going to go on your credit report. This is the message, I think, that we are giving our children when we co-sign a loan for them. We're saying, if you don't have the money to pay for it, buy it anyway. And what about credit cards? When we hand a credit card to a child, are we teaching them to be responsible or irresponsible? Well, I know you've all heard of Murphy's Law. A home is a blessing. But if you move into home ownership with debt and no emergency fund, Murphy is going to set up residence in the spare bedroom, because something's going to happen. Now, financial advisors, some of them will tell you that mortgage debt is good debt. I don't know any debt that's good. I would say probably you could justify mortgage debt more than you could justify some other types of debt. And they'll give you three basic reasons for mortgage debt. Number one, a home gives you a place to live. Number two, houses don't depreciate. And number three, you get an income tax deduction for the interest paid. All right, well, I think I can shoot holes in all three of those theories. First of all, you know, a home gives you a place to live, but so does a rented house. And when you have a rented house, you haven't tied up all your cash reserves. If you don't plan to stay right here for the next 5 years, I wouldn't buy a house because you never know what's going to happen. You might have to move, and then you've got to sell it. All right, number two, houses don't depreciate. Well, folks, when times are booming, people run around like chickens with their heads cut off, buying things they don't have the money for, with money they don't have, and to impress people that they don't even like. And they do it in record numbers. Even a turkey can fly in a tornado. Houses can and do depreciate. Just ask the South Floridians or people from California or Arizona. When the market is hot, it is the very time not to buy. Now, I think I could sum up what economics means in just a few words. If everybody wants it, the price goes up. If people quit buying it, the price is going to go down. That pretty much sums up economics. Number three, you get an income tax deduction for the interest paid. Well, mortgages are front-loaded with interest. Go home and get on your computer and look up a mortgage calculator with an amortization schedule and look at what it costs you in interest and then look at how slowly you get the principal down. For example, if you borrowed, let's say you bought a $250,000 house and paid $50,000 down, and you're going to finance $200,000 at 6% interest. I think you'd probably get a better deal than that right now with interest rates as low as they are, but you're going to do it for 30 years. Your payment is $1,199. We're just going to round it off to $1,200. $1,000 of it is interest the first year. So you're paying $1,200, but you're only getting $200 paid off the principal. So the first year, you would have paid $14,400 in payments, but the principal is still almost $198,000. In 5 years, you would have paid $72,000, and only $14,000 of it went on the principal. Now, that income tax deduction, let's say you paid $12,000 a year in interest, and you were in a 30% income tax bracket. That means you will have saved $3,600 in taxes. Now, which would you rather do? Pay $12,000 in interest or pay $3,600 in taxes to the IRS? Sounds like to me it's not that great a deal. All right, here's some suggestions. Consider paying cash for your house. It's not impossible. I have a cousin whose father had six kids, and he worked at Lockheed Aircraft from 8 to 5, and then he came home and did every kind of work he could think of to try to feed those six kids. When the kids got older, he started a business digging ditches, and all three of his boys went through high school and college working their way. They worked after school and on Saturdays. When Steve, the youngest son, was 19 years old, he bought 26 acres of land and a house to go with it and paid cash for it. Now it's got 60-something acres, and the house looks like a hotel. But I have known a number of people through the years who have paid cash for a house. They might have lived in a garage apartment for 5 years and saved all their money for 5 years. But it's not impossible. Never pay more than 25% of your take-home pay for a mortgage. Banks will loan you 25 to 35% of your gross pay. But don't pay more than 25%. It's too much. Make as big a down payment as you can. And get a 15-year loan versus a 30-year loan. Now, the difference in that $200,000 house, you're going to pay $155,000 more in interest on a 30-year loan versus a 15-year loan. If you've already got a 30-year loan, pay extra on the principal every month, and you will pay the house off in record time. But only 3% of people ever do that. And lastly, stay away from ARMs, those adjustable rate mortgages. You take out an adjustable rate mortgage, and you have no idea what you're going to pay, because that rate can go up and down. Now, be sure to read your lesson. There's a whole lot of information on credit and some things you probably want to know. And let's live like no one else so that we can live like no one else. Live like no one else, debt-free, so that we can live like no one else, well-to-do. Okay, see you next week.